Maseches Chulin, we will see that the first two prakim will focus on the halachas of shechita, not in the Beis Hamikdash, but shechita of Chulin, which is non-sacred animals. And in fact, we will have, certainly in the first parak, a lot of divergence from that topic as well. Mishnah Aleph starts as follows. Who can do the shechita? Kol shochtin, everyone can do shechita. This is talking about somebody who knows the halachas of shechita. It will be lechatchil if they shecht, even if we haven't tested their shechita yet, but as long as they know the halachas, ushchita san kshera, somebody who we have not tested yet and does the shechita, that will only be bidyeved. We have to check him afterwards to make sure he knows the halachas, but if we didn't check him in advance, that's going to be a bidyeved shechita. Chutz mecheresh shote vekatan, the exception is, even if they do know the halachas, if we have a cheresh who's a deaf mute, a shota, somebody who's insane, or a katan, somebody below the age of bar mitzvah, they cannot shecht, shema yikalkalu b'shechitasam, because they may not do a good job. They may ruin the shechita v'chulan, even those three, sheshachtu v'achirim roinasan, if they are supervised by somebody who does know the halachas of shechita, shechita san kshera, their shechita will be considered kosher. Now we're going to talk about somebody whose shechita will not be kosher whatsoever, even if supervised by the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world. It doesn't matter. Shechita is nachri, if it's a non-Jew that is doing the shechita, the animal would be a nevela. It will be totally invalid. Shechito, metame, b'mas, and add, just because it's a nevela, a consequence of its being a nevela is that it will be metame, tumas, masa, which means if somebody carries it, even if the person doesn't touch it, it will cause there to be tuma. Hashoche, balayla, if somebody shechts at night without having light, v'chein ha-suma, sheshachan, and if you have somebody who's blind, and effectively it's nighttime always for the suma, for somebody who's blind, they did the shechita, shechita sokshera, that will only be kosher bidyeved. Hashochet b'Shabbos, if b'shoged, by mistake, somebody shecht on Shabbos, forgot that it was Shabbos, or dinto shechita was usher on Shabbos, that's considered a shogeg, uviyom ha-kippurim, or it was done on Yom Kippur, afal pishin yischai benash, even though it's a very serious aver, if it had been done intentionally, but it was because it was done b'shogeg on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, shechita san kshera, the shechita will be kosher b'dievid. Mishnah Beis, we are now going to talk about the implements that are used for the shechita, and an important rule here is that you have to use something that has a very smooth blade, not a serrated blade. And a second general rule that's important is you cannot use something that is attached to where it grows. An example would be that if you have a sharp reed, but it's attached to the ground, it has never been detached, that is going to be invalid. And we'll see a little bit later, the same will apply to using somebody's nail. Somebody has a very long, sharp nail that is considered still attached to the body, and it will be invalid as well. Mishnah Beis, Hashochet b'magal yad, somebody who shechts with a hand sickle. A hand sickle is something that has two edges. One is smooth and the other edge is serrated. Chazal were goals there. They decreed, don't use the smooth edge, because you may come to confuse that with the serrated edge, and you may come to use the serrated edge. So don't use that magal yad. Bitzor uvekane, this is a sharp stone and a sharp reed, and it's talking about when they had been detached from the ground and reattached. If it was always attached, certainly it would be invalid, but if it was detached and then reattached into the ground, then shechita sal kshera, in this situation, the shechita will be kosher bidyeved. Hashkol shochtim, we're now recapping a little bit from the prior Mishnah. Hakol shochtim, anyone could do shechita, with certain minor exceptions. Ulom shechot shochtim, and you can shecht in any place, including at night. Uvakol shochtim, and you can shecht with any sharp blade that is not serrated. Chutz mimagal katsir, with the exception of a harvesting sickle. A harvesting sickle is serrated, but as we will see shortly, the serrations go only in one direction. They point towards the person who's doing the shechita, not away. Chutz mimagal katsir, you cannot use a harvesting sickle. V'megere on a saw, obviously serrated. V'hashinayim, and if you have the teeth, for example, of an animal, the jawbone of an animal, that is considered serrated also. And also v'atziporn, and the nail also, mipnei shehen chokim. Now, because they indeed use the serrated edge, they are tearing. It's not a smooth motion, it's a tearing motion. That rationale there, because they tear, is referring to the first three items we listed, the harvesting sickle, the saw, and the teeth. That is, those are serrated, they tear. The tziporn is for the other reason we mentioned before, because the tziporn is considered a nail is attached to where it came from, and you can't use something that's still attached. Continuing, going back to the hashochet b'magal katsir, using that harvesting sickle that we said that the serrations go in one direction. So if you use it in the other direction, not against the serrations, but with the serrations, so you're not tearing, you're using it effectively as a smooth land. So habemagal katsir b'derech achilia. So if you do it away from yourself in the forward motion, so you're not using the serrations, it's smooth. Nonetheless, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel would say that the meat cannot be eaten. It's going to be an invalid shechita. Nonetheless, we have a machlokas whether it causes the animal to be to an, become an avela and be, will become mitame something tumas masa. So Beis Shammai poslim. Beis Shammai is of the view that it is an avela and it will cause her to be tuma. Beis Hillel is of the view that albeit you cannot eat the meat, but it will not cause her to be tuma. Vim hichliku shineha, and if you smooth out the serrations, harehi kesakin, it's like any other smooth edge that would be acceptable for shechita. Mishnah Gimel is going to talk about a psul, one of the five halachah Moshe Messina psulim called hagrama, that there's a specific location that you need to do the shechita. And this will be Mishnah Gimel. We'll continue that concept in Mishnah Dalet as well. Hashochet mitoch hatabas. So the way that the windpipe is structured is that there are rings of cartilage all the way up. And the top, the highest ring, you have to be careful that when you do the shechita has to be within the ring, not outside the ring. You can't go too high. So the Tana Kama is going to tell us that you have to be careful that you always also have to leave a little tiny ring atop of it when you do the shechita that's still attached to the head. You can't go out of that top ring. You need all the way around a hand's breadth, at least a hair's breadth, at least of that ring remaining attached to the head. So ashochet mitoch hatabat vishir ba meloha chut al pnei kula. If you shecht in that top ring and you did leave a hair's breadth all the way around of it, that's going to be kosher shechita. But if you didn't leave that hair's breadth all the way around that top ring attached to the head, then it's going to be invalid. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Mer Meloha Chut Al Pnei Ruba. You don't have to leave that hair's breadth all the way around. Just the majority of around you have to do it. But if there's a little bit amount that you cut through, that is going to be acceptable shechita. Now we're going to talk about in Mishnah Dalet where around the head, around the neck, do we do the shechita? And what we're going to do is we're going to divide it up into three zones. We're going to talk about the throat, that's the front of the animal. We're going to talk about the neck, the back of the neck, and we're also going to talk about the sides. And while we're doing this, we're going to contrast shechita to melika. Melika is the use of the thumbnail by the Kohen in the base of Mikdash when somebody brings a burnt offering. And we'll see that the shechita and the melika are done in the opposite location. So the three zones we're going to start as follows with the side of the neck. Hashochek minat stadim. If somebody did the shechita from the side of the neck, shechita sakshera, the shechita is going to be kosher. Hamolek minat stadim. However, the Kohen in bringing that bird offering in the base of Mikdash did the malika with his thumbnail from the side of the neck, malika to psula, that is going to be invalid, that malika. That is zone number one. We see that the side of the neck, you can do the shechita on manata malika. Next zone, we're going to talk about the back of the neck. Hashochet mina oref. If somebody did the shechita from the back of the neck, shechita sabsula, that is invalid. Hamolek mina oref malika toksher. If you did the malika, the Kohen did the malika on the back of the neck, that is going to be valid. And zone number three, we're going to talk about the throat, the front of the neck. Hashochet mina tzavar. If you did the shechita on the throat, shechita sakshera, so that is where you should be doing the shechita. That is going to be kosher. Molek minat tzavar. However, if you did the Kohen did the malika on the throat, malika to psula, that is going to be invalid. Shekol ha'oref kasha malika. We come to the malika, the back of the neck, the entire back of the neck is going to be that place that you do the malika. V'chol hatzavar kasha l'shechita, and the entire throat is going to be kosher for the shechita. But not the reverse. Nimtza, accordingly, kasha b'shchita, possible malika. The place that is kosher for the shchita is going to be invalid for the malika. Kasha b'malika, the place that is kosher for the malika, that's the back of the neck, possible the shchita is going to be invalid for the shchita. Mishnah Hay is going to continue, and also Mishnah Vav, the pattern that we just saw, that something works for A, doesn't work for B, and when something works for B, doesn't work for A. So we're going to see that in the next two Mishnayos. Mishneh talks about the bird offerings in the Beis Hamikdash. There were only two, Torim, which is turtle doves, and B'nai Yonah, pigeons. And whenever the pigeons are discussed, it's not called the Yonah, it's called a B'nai Yonah. And we learn from that that the pigeons, when you bring it in the Beis Hamikdash, it's a korban, it has to be young. And the turtle doves, the Torim, have to be older, more mature, but not the reverse. So the Mishnah says as follows, Kosher B'Torim, when something is going to be kosher as a Tor, that is the turtle dove, has to be brought as an adult, a mature bird, possible B'nai Yonah. It's going to be invalid when bringing the pigeons because the pigeon has to be a B'nai Yonah. It has to be young, not older. And Kasha B'nai Yonah, possible B'torim. The same with the reverse, that the pigeon has to be young, the pigeon has to be B'nai Yonah, and the turtle dove has to be older. Now, there's also an intermediate phase, a middle stage there between young and old. We can call it the adolescent stage. That is when the feathers of the neck begin to turn yellow. The Mishnah tells us, Tchilas Hitzihu of Bezeu Bezeu, when that is changing of the feathers to yellow, is happening, whether for the turtle dove or the pigeons, that's going to be possible. It's going to be invalid because the Torim, the turtle dove, has to be older. The B'nai Yonah has to be younger and not in the middle. Now we're going to see that pattern continuing. Mishnah Vav, various examples. Kosher B'Para, something that is kosher when it comes to the Para Aduma, the red heifer. That is talking about Shechita. To prepare the red heifer, the Para Aduma, you need to do Shechita on it. Pasul be'egla, when we have the egla or rufa, when a dead body is found between two cities, we go through, we take an egel, we take a calf, and we chop it from the back of the neck. That is arufa, that is the arifa of the egla arufa, so it's not a shechita, it's hitting it from the back of the neck. So what works for the paraduma, which is shechita, does not work for the egla arufa, and kasha be'egla, that which works for the egla arufa, which is chopping it from the back, pasul be'para, that's not going to work for the para, because we need shechita on the paraduma. Next example, number two in this Mishnah, following this pattern, kasher be'kohanim, possible avim. That which is good, is valid for a Kohanim, is going to invalidate a Levi doing the avoda. It's talking about a Levi in the Mishkan above the age of 50, or also in the base of Mikdash. If the voice of the Levi stops working, that will invalidate the Levi. That contrasts with a Kohen, even above 50, even if his voice isn't working, he's going to be valid to do the avoda. And the reverse as follows, kasha lebevim, what is valid for a Levi, what it will not invalidate a Levi. It's talking about if we have a Levi that has a baal mum, he's a baal mum, he has a defect, he has a blemish, he is going to be able to still do his work in the base of Mikdash and the Mishkan, possible Kohanim, that is going to invalidate a Kohen, because a Kohen cannot be a baal mum, cannot be blemished. Third example of this pattern, we are now going to talk about sources of tuma when it touches a kli. Tachor b'kli cheres, that which will not cause tuma to an earthenware vessel, tame b'chol ha-kelim, is indeed going to cause tuma when it causes to all other kelim. What we're talking about now is if it gets touched from the outside. So a kli cheres, which is an earthenware vessel, is only going to be mitame if something comes on the inside of the kli, not the outside. So even if it gets touched by something tame on the outside, it's going to be tahor. In contrast with all other kelim, that will become tame when something tamei touches it from the outside, and the reverse of that, tahor b'chol ha-kelim, tamei b'kli cheres, what is not going to be cause tuma for all other kelim will cause tuma for the kli cheres. This is talking about when something tamei enters the airspace of a kli cheres, even if it doesn't touch it on the inside, but simply by virtue of its being in its airspace, it will cause the kli cheres, the earthenware vessel, to become tamei, contrasted to other kelim that without contact, even if it's within its airspace, it will not cause it to become tamei. Fourth example of our pattern. Now we are going to talk about if we have a tahor b'kliyera eitz. If we have, we're going to contrast now a kli, something, an item that is made of wood versus metal. And what we're talking about here is if you have a klal, we have a principle of pshute kliyets. If we have something that is made of wood, it's a simple wood, it doesn't have a receptacle to hold something. It doesn't have a base kibble, so that eights, if that item of wood, even if something that is tame touches it, it will not become tame because it's classified as pshute kliyes. It doesn't hold anything. So tahor b'kliyes, that which is tahor, and when it comes to wood, tame b'klimatachos. When it comes to metal, it's going to be metame. So even if you have a klimateches that is not, it doesn't have a kli, it doesn't have a receptacle to hold anything in it, nonetheless, it can become tame when it comes in contact with something that's tame. Tahor b'klimatachos, tame b'kliyes. And on the reverse, when it comes to all other kalim of matechas, when it comes to metal vessels, we're going to contrast contrast that with a kli that is wood. And now we're talking about the contrast here is if it's unfinished. It's something that can be used. It can be used to hold something, but it's not finished totally. So if it's made of metal, it cannot become tamei until it is completed. If it's made of wood, it can become tamei even if it's not completed. As long as it's a kli, it has a base kibble, it can hold something, it's going to become tamei. And fifth example of our pattern, hachayav b'shkedim. Now we're talking about the halachas of trumas and maisos. And the halacha when it comes to trumas and maisos is that you don't have to take off trumas and maisos as something that is inedible, only something that is edible. And we're going to talk about almonds now, that there are two types. There are bitter and there are sweet. And they act in the reverse way as follows. An almond that is bitter, it is only going to be edible when it's small, but not when it's large. And the reverse, when it comes to an almond that is sweet, it's only going to be edible when it is large, not when it is small. As follows, hachayev b'shkeidim hamarim, when there's a chiv to take off chumas and maestros with the almonds when they're small, because that's when they're edible, pater b'metokim. When it gets to the sweet ones, you're not going to have to take off chumas and maestros when they're small, because they're not edible when they're small. And the reverse as follows, hachayev b'metokim, when there's a chiv to take off chumas and maestros with the sweet ones, it's talking about when they're large, because that's when they're edible. Pater b'marim, you are not going to take off chumas and maestros when talking about large, bitter almonds, because they are no longer edible when they get large. Mishnah Zion, we are going to see a similar pattern, but not exactly the same. In the prior couple of Mishnahs, we've been talking about comparing and contrasting, more contrasting two items, A to B and B to A. Now we're going to talk about a single item that goes through two different stages in its life cycle, and we're going to have five different examples of this, and we're going to start off talking about tamed. Tamed is a drink that is made from leftover sediment of grapes. So you've already taken most of the juice out, and you can run water through the sediment again, the seeds, the klipa, the shells of it, and we're going to run it through, and it's going to be considered halachically water until it ferments. And once it ferments, it's going to be non-water. It's going to become a low-quality wine. So the Mishnah says that there are two consequences, halacha consequences of whether it's before or after fermentation. Hatemed, this drink, grape drink, achalo hichmis, before it is fermented into wine. Eino nikach bekesef meiser, you cannot use your meiser sheni money. When you have meiser sheni money up in your shlaim, you can only buy food and drink items, but water is not considered a drink item for purposes of use of meiser sheni funding. So until it ferments, this is water, you can't use meiser sheni funds. And if you dump it into a mikvah before there are 40 se'ah in that mikvah, if you put in 3 lugim of this temed before it ferments, that is going to be considered mayim she'uvim, and it will invalidate the mikvah. On the other hand, mishehichmetz, we're still talking about the temed, but we've gone to the stage that it has fermented, so it's going to be the reverse. Nikach bekesef meiser, now that it's fermented, it's not considered water anymore. Accordingly, we're going to be able to use meiser sheni funds to purchase it in Yerushalayim, ve'eino posel as a mikvah, and if it's dumped into the mikvah because it's not water, it's not mayim she'uvin, it's a different type of liquid, it's considered wine now, it's not going to invalidate that mikvah, even though the mikvah did not have 40 sa'ah in it yet. Halacha number 2, a little bit complicated, this one, we're talking about brothers that the father passed away and left the estate. And we're going to talk about initially in this example, in this halacha, of where they divided up the estate. They have each taken the Yerusha parts, and then they repartnered together, for example, as business partners. Then there are going to be two ramifications of this, that they are partnered together as opposed to the estate being owned still effectively by the father, even though he passed away. So now that they partnered together, two halachas. Number one is kishechaya vin bekalbon. This is a halacha when it comes to giving the machatzisa shekel, when the half a shekel was given, there was a concern that there wouldn't be enough silver. The silver would be missing, the full amount of the silver from the machatzisa shekel given to the base of Mikdash. So everyone had to add on, or almost everyone had to add on a kalbon, which is a tiny amount of silver, a small coin, had to be added as well. There were certain times that a kalbon did not have to be added. For example, if somebody gave as a gift paid somebody else's machatzitza shekel. So A pays for B's machatzitza shekel as a gift, you wouldn't have to add a kalbon. So in our situation, because we have these two brothers, they divided assets and then they repartnered, but they're looked at as individuals. Each of them, when they give their machatzitza shekel, they're going to have to add on a kalbon. Each of them is going to have to add a kalbon. On the other hand, because they are partnered, there's a halacha when it comes to giving meiser behema, the tithing of an animal on an annual basis when they had the base of mikdash. If you have partners, a partnership would not be chayiv and meiser behema, only individual. So, accordingly, now that these two brothers are partnered together in their assets they own together, peturim and meiser behema, they are not going to have to take off the meiser behema. In contrast, if they did not divide the estate yet, so it's still effectively owned by the father, kishechayavim b'meiser behema, because they're not partnered together, it's still owned by the estate. So any meiser behema, any new animals would have to be tithed on an annual basis. That would be an obligation because, again, this estate is still intact. Pturi min al kalbon, because if that estate would pay for the brothers, the heirs, if it would pay for their machatzitza shekel, it's one person. The estate is viewed as one person, not a partnership, paying for somebody else's machatzitza shekel. So accordingly, kalbon would not have to be added. Third halacha in following this pattern, we're talking about a father's rights to sell off his daughter when she's a katana up until the age of 12, his rights to sell her as an ama, ivria, a maidservant, for 6 years. So the Mishnah says as follows, komakam sheish mecha, the time that the father can sell off his daughter as an ama, ivria, it's talking about when she's a katana up until the age of 12, ein knas, if a man would violate or seduce her, he would not have to pay the 50 shekel required by the Torah, because that only applies when she is a na'ara. A na'ara is when she hits 12 years old and shows the signs that she has reached maturity. So the father, when he can sell her, there's not going to be a knas if somebody would violate her because she's a katana. On the other hand, we're going to see the reverse, that when she hits the age of a na'ara, 12 years old, komakam she is knas, if a man would violate her when she is a na'ara, he would have to pay the knas. If he violates her or seduces her, he'd have to pay the 50 shekel. At that point, because she's a na'ara, ein mecha, the father would not have the right to sell her as an ama ha'ivira, that maidservant. Halacha number dalid. Halacha number four in our Mishnah. We are now going to talk about a concept that on a d'oraisa level, a father is permitted to marry off his daughter even when she's a katana, even below the age of 12. However, other relatives, for example, if the father passes away, the mother, the brother, they don't have a d'oraisa right to do that, but Chazal instituted that they can marry her off when she is a katana, when she's below the age of 12. However, a ramification of that is she can refuse. Up until when she becomes a na'ara, up until when she's 12, she doesn't need a get. She could simply say, I don't want to stay with this man, and it's done with. So the Mishnah says as follows, komakam sheish miyun, the entire time that she can refuse when she was quote-unquote married off by a mother or a brother or a relative, any time that she can simply refuse without a get, ein chalitza, if she was married, her father had married her off, she's married, a real marriage, but her husband passes away and they didn't have children, he doesn't have children, there would be no chalitza by his brothers, his extant brothers. V'chomakam she is chalitza, anytime there is a chalitza, because a chalitza is only done when a girl is above the age of 12, when she's a na'ara, at that point, ein miyun, there is going to be no ability for this girl who's mother, brother married her off, she can't simply refuse and not require a get. Once she hits the age of 12, she's an ara. In order to divorce her husband, she is going to require a get. Fifth halacha, when it comes to this pattern, komakam sheish tekiya ein havdala, we will just read it and then we'll explain it, because on this one, the Mishnah goes into more detail. Any time that we blow the tekiya, we blow the shofar, ein havdala, we do not say havdala. The chomakam sheish havdala, anytime we do say the havdala, ain't tekiya, we don't blow the shofar. What does that mean? So the Mishnah explains. Yom Tov Shechal Yos Be'er Shabbos, if Yom Tov falls on Friday, so Thursday night, Friday is Yom Tov, there's a halacha, every Friday, every regular Friday, when Shabbos was approaching, they would blow the shofar to alert people that Shabbos was going to start soon. So too, when Yom Tov falls on Friday, token, we would blow the shofar, we'd have to tell people we are going, even though it's Yom Tov, we would go from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook, letzorach ochel nefesh, for food on Shabbos, you're not, we have to alert people, so we need to blow the shofars, v'lom avdilin, and we do not have a havdalah going from Yontif to Shabbos. For example, we don't say havdalah on the coast. We don't say it in our davening. There's no havdalah. the converts, b'motzei Shabbos, now we are in Motzei Shabbos, and it's going to be Yontif starting Saturday night and Sunday. So in this situation, we would be mavdilim. We do say Avdallah, going from Shabbos to Yontif, v'lotokin, and we do not blow the shofar, who was prohibited to cook. We don't have to alert people that it's prohibited to cook. It's going to be permitted for them to cook, to alert them to do something that they're permitted to do. We don't have to blow the shofars. And now the Mishnah concludes, Ketzah mavdilim, when it comes to Yontif, that falls on Motzei Shabbos. So what Havdalah do we say? We're talking about the conclusion of the bracha. We use the normal nusach of Havdalah, Ben Kodesh Lachobo, and all the Chosh, Ben Yechol Amiv, etc. But how do we conclude the Havdalah, Hamavdil, Ben Kodesh Lachodesh? As we know, when we go from Shabbos to Yontif, we conclude it. We are going, we're making Havdalah, Ben Kodesh, that's between Shabbos and Yontif. Rabbi Dosa, Omer, Rabbi Dosa says a little bit different. Ben Kodesh Chamor, Le Kodesh Kal. The end of the bracha is we are going from a stricter Kedusha to a lighter Kedusha. The stricter Kedusha Shabbos, a lighter Kedusha Yontif, because we're allowed to cook. However, we do not paskin that way, because saying that would be a bit of a zilzul, a bit of a disgrace to the Kedusha of Yontif.